branch or the main branch or some branch, but it was a rotary function. In any case, yours is a very reputed worldwide organization. You have been doing excellent work all over the world, and my heartfelt congratulations and best wishes to all of you. Today's topic is spirituality, the missing dimension in life. Before I begin and get onto the topic proper, I want to ask if all of you have heard of a certain acronym or an abbreviation. By acronym, I mean something like, for example, IPS means Indian Police Service, IAS means Indian Administrative Service, like that. So how many of you have heard of this acronym called FOMO, F-O-M-O? Any of you have heard? Yes, thank you. Fear of missing out. So fear of missing out is a relatively new acronym. It was coined by some corporate marketing strategist sometime in the 1990s, I believe. Because those who are in the field of business, who are selling some products to consumers, they have to tap into the psychology of the consumer. So they have to understand psychology very well. And based on the psychology of consumers, then they market their products, they advertise their products, they sell their products. So fear of missing out has been borrowed from this corporate terminology into general terminology. It generally indicates a fear that if I don't perform some particular act, then I will miss out on something. I will lack something. Something that is very important, something that is very fundamental to my happiness. It could be anything simple, like the latest mobile phone. It could be something like the latest car. It could be something like wanting to associate in a certain kind of social circle, and not being there then is something very painful to us. So it could be any number of things. So when we desire something very badly, because we think it has some value, because we think it can make us happy, and we don't get it, then we become miserable. So therefore, we always fear something that we want, because there is a possibility we may not get it. So the fear of missing out is a fear that is there in most people. It is not confined only to children or to teenagers. It happens in all age groups. And especially this term FOMO has come into focus in the social media age, when on Instagram, Facebook, and such social media platforms, youngsters are constantly tweeting or they are posting messages and pictures and videos, and each person is telling all his or her friend circle, look, this is what I was doing, or this is what I am planning to do. I want to go for this party, or I will go to such and such hotel. And he or she will post some photograph. And the others who are reading will see, oh, I also wanted to be there. I also want to be part of that program. So the fear that I will miss out on some form of enjoyment, on something that is very important to me. I want to have a sense of belonging with that group, with that activity, with that particular object, and I don't want to lose out on it. So generally that gives not only a sense of fear, but it also gives rise to a sense of envy. That person has it, I don't have it. Actually, this is a driving force behind marketing in the corporate world. They prey on this mindset that you will be envious of someone who has something more than you. And therefore, you have to tap into that insecurity, that fear, that desire, and tell them, look, you can also be like that person. So you also buy my product. When I was a schoolboy, I remember television had just started in India. And then after some years, some advertisements started coming on and I moved into college. There was one very famous advertisement about a television brand. And the advertisement was, owner's pride, neighbor's envy. Some of you may remember that. So this particular television brand was marketing their television set, saying that our television is so good, people will envy you for it. So not only are they tapping into our sense of being envious of others who have more than us, but they are also inducing us to act in such a way that other people will become envious of us. So this kind of feeling of inadequacy, this sense of feeling of envy and wanting to have something that others may have, is very fundamental to our worldly life. Never mind if these things cannot actually make us happy. Never mind if after some time we will get tired of that TV or that phone or whatever it is. But the fact that others are doing it means that I must have it. So we have this fear of missing out because we think that this is something very valuable, very important for me. So all over the world this psychology is going on, and it is not something new. It has always existed in the history of humanity. But only now this has become more and more prominent, because we are becoming more and more materialistic. What does it mean to be materialistic? Being materialistic means that we are preoccupied with, or we give too much emphasis, too much importance, too much value to material things. Like, for example, we give too much importance to our body, to our beauty, to our clothes. We give too much importance to money and everything that money can buy. We give too much importance to all the enjoyments of this world. We give too much importance to the prestige and name and fame in this world. And we start thinking that this is the most important thing in life. This is the standard of success. This is the measure of happiness. So in this way, we become more and more engrossed, and it reaches a feverish pitch. There is one little story that our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada used to say, and I narrate this story very often because it is so telling, because it reflects the mindset of the modern day world very much. There was once a very rich man who had a wife, and this wife had fever. She had fever of about 100 degrees. Now there was a maid servant in the house, and she also had fever. So she had a fever of 102. So the lady of the house became very angry, and she said, how is it that I, as the mistress of the house, have only 100, and this is the maid servant, and she has 102. She has more than me. So the husband tried to explain to her that, look, she has only fever that is more than you. But otherwise, you have everything that is more than her. No, no, I am the mistress of the house. There should be nothing that anybody else in this house should have more than me. So what can be done? So our founder Srila Prabhupada explained that this is exactly the situation of the people of this world. This lady could very well have done without fever. Nobody likes to have fever. But because somebody else has it, I compare myself, and if I have something less, then I want to raise my fever. So I have I have no car, but my neighbor has a car. So I feel then I must also have a car, because I'm missing out, FOMO, F-O-M-O. I'm missing out on something that this person is enjoying. He's going out with his family in a car every day, and I'm going on scooter. So therefore, I also want a car. If once I acquire a Maruti car or some small car, that person has some bigger car, then I say, I want a car that is bigger than that. And in this way, we are never satisfied with whatever we have. Excuse me, I'm just recovering from some slight illness, not corona, don't worry. But since I had promised to you that I will come, so I wanted to keep my appointment. So, we are raising our demands in this world in a feverish manner. We all are engaged in raising our fever and comparing it to others. And if somebody else has more fever than us, has more money, has more goods, has more better car, better reputation, better prestige, then we become restless and we say, I also want to raise my fever. And then we madly go after trying to procure these things, to acquire these things, yena kena prakarena, which means by any way, by hook or by crook, somehow or the other, we must acquire those things. So this is called progress. So we should start examining in our life, what truly is this progress that we are talking about? Just because we have raised our economic standard of living, does that mean we have made progress? Just because our grandparents may not have had a big car, and today we have a big car, a bigger house, and because we have electronic gadgets and we have a lot of money, more than our grandparents and the previous forefathers had, have we made more progress than them? No, that is not necessarily the case. So progress is something that we have wrongly defined. We have defined it only in materialistic terms. But real progress is that which will bring true welfare of the world. It will bring true happiness. It will bring true love. It will bring a spirit of cooperation and trust and love amongst humanity. Not that it should just bring a sense of envy and hatred towards each other. Many times when people talk to me about their problems, because this is natural, everybody has problems in life. So sometimes when they come to a sadhu, they open their heart and they tell us their problems. And I have not seen any profession or any individual where the people are not disturbed about what is going on in their particular situation, either in their profession, in their workplace, in their social place, in their family, wherever it is. So there are so many stories I hear every time about how there is so much politics going on, how somebody is trying to pull down somebody else, and how somebody interfered in the path of somebody else's progress. So this is the materialistic mentality at play, where we want success at any cost, but we don't want the other to succeed. This is another form of envy. So therefore, when we are fearing missing out on the good things of life, what we think are the good things of life, we are actually exhibiting envy, we are exhibiting hatred, we are actually exhibiting some emotion that is negative, because we don't want others to prosper. We don't want others to do well in their life. So therefore we keep comparing. So this idea of always comparing ourselves to others and using that as a yardstick by which to measure our own success is not at all a good standard for judging the quality of our life. It simply lowers our self-esteem. Why should my happiness, why should my peace of mind be dependent on whether somebody else has something less or more than me? That means I'm lowering my own self in my own eyes. I'm letting those other people control my life because those people have something more than me. Regardless of whether I actually need something or not, I will try to acquire it even after taking a lot of pain. But we don't realize that grass is always greener on the other side, which means it may appear that those people who have more are actually happy, but that is not the case. I will tell you a little story. Once, this is a story that probably your children or your grandchildren, depending on your age, may have heard in their school. This is a story I have heard from my childhood. So once upon a time, there was a crow. So the crow was always feeling, oh, I am so black. I'm just fully black like charcoal. So the crow was not happy with its own appearance. So one day as the crow was flying, he saw a swan who was swimming in the river. So he approached the swan and revealed his mind and said, "My dear swan, look, you have such a beautiful white body and I have a very dark black, pitch black body, and I wish I could be like you." So the swan said, "Oh, don't think like that. Don't think that if you have my white skin, you will be happy, because I have white skin. But look, I am looking at the parrot. The parrot has two colors, red and green. So I always envy the parrot, thinking that the parrot is much better looking than me. I have only white color, and the parrot has red and green color. And the parrot looks so much more beautiful than me." So the crow now went to the parrot and said, "Oh parrot, you are so beautiful looking. You have two colors, red and green. So I also wish I could become like you." "Oh my dear crow, what do I tell you? I have only two colors, but every time I see the peacock, I feel so much envy. Just look at the peacock's feathers. Look at the peacock's skins. So many colors are there, and I have only two. And the peacock is so beautiful and I am not that beautiful." So then the crow thought, "Okay, now let me go to the peacock." So he went to the peacock and he was looking, "Where do I find the peacock?" Finally he found one in the zoo. So he went to the zoo and he approached the peacock. "My dear friend, you are so lucky. You are so beautiful. Just look at all your different colorful parts, your feathers. Multicolored, full spectrum is there in your feathers." So the peacock replied, "Oh my dear crow, you know, grass is always greener on the other side. You may think I'm very beautiful, I'm very fortunate, I have multicolored feathers, but just see, because I am so beautiful, the human being, he has captured me and put me in the zoo, and I have lost my freedom. So better I should be like you. Even though you are ugly, but at least you are free. So be satisfied with where you are." So the lesson, the moral of the story was, don't worry about what others have or don't have. Be content with what destiny is providing you. In Sanskrit, we use the word prarabdha. Prakrishta rupena arabdha. That which has arambha. Jo arambha ho chuka hai, that which has started in this life, your destiny. According to the karmas we have performed in our previous life, we will get happiness or distress. We will get success or failure. So there are certain things that are destined according to our past karma. So therefore, we should remain satisfied with whatever destiny is providing us. we should work hard, we should work intelligently. At the same time, we should not unduly become disturbed when things don't happen according to our plan. After all, man proposes, God disposes. Also, we should not unduly strive to obtain more and more and more. We should not start thinking that somebody has more, I want to be like them, because that person has more because of his or her destiny. Now, bringing in the concept of destiny does not mean that I will be lazy and I will just put one hand on the other hand and sit down and say, well, that is my destiny. Actually, sometimes even that happens. Sometimes. A person is born in, with a silver spoon in the mouth, he's born in the family of a king. I was reading an article somebody sent me the other day about the children of the richest people on the earth, on the globe. And the way they are exhibiting and flaunting their wealth. And in that article it showed the picture of one, the teenager son of one who was wearing 4 Rolex watches. Because he has to show that I have 4 Rolex watches. And they had so many things, I cannot even explain to you how the young generation of these richest in the world, top 10 rich people or whatever, they don't know how to display their wealth. How to utilize their wealth. So they are just born into wealth. They have not done anything in this life to earn that wealth. They have just got it. And eventually, if they don't lead a proper life, they will destroy everything that their forefathers have built up. And that happens because wealth never lasts long. Power never lasts long. Only few generations at the most. Even kingdoms, royal kingdoms. You look at history, remember your school history that you studied. No empire has survived more than a certain number of years. Maybe 200 years, 250 years maximum. Very rarely you will find some empire that has lived longer than that. So this is how destiny is. Destiny comes, it brings some success, it brings failure. It is like a wave, up and down, it will come and go. So according to Bhagavad Gita, the intelligent person must not get carried away by these waves of success and failure. But rather we must try to be equipoised and understand that this is not the goal of my life. This is not the thing that will bring me happiness. These are not the things that I am missing out in my life really. What I am missing out in my life is something different. Something higher than this. And to illustrate this, I will tell you another story from the great Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Puran. I am sure many of you have heard of this book. So there was a king. His name was Uttanapada. And he had 2 sons. Who were very young boys. One was called Uttama and the other was called Dhruva. Now, Uttam was sitting on the lap of his father. Now, Uttam was the son of one queen and Dhruva was the son of another queen. Now, the king, he was partial. He had many queens, as was the practice in those days. So he was more partial towards the mother of Uttam. So because of that, he was keeping Uttam on his lap and fondling him. Dhruva, who was also only 5 years old at that time, he saw this and he also wanted to climb onto his father's lap and sit down on the lap. But Uttam's mother was there and she prevented him from doing that. She pulled Dhruva down from the lap and said, "You can have no right to sit on the king's lap. You can do that only if you are born from my womb." So Dhruva became very insulted, although he was only 5 years old. But he was so humiliated and so insulted by this that he felt, "I will go and get a kingdom that is greater than even my grandfather's kingdom." So when he came back home, his mother said, "My dear son, I cannot help you much because Uttam's mother is your father's favorite queen. Your king does not pay much attention to me, so I am not in a position to help you." So young Dhruva, he asked his mother, "Then who can help me? I want a very big kingdom." So she said, "God can help you." "Oh God, where does God stay? I will go and meet him." "No, no, you can't just go and meet God like that. But I have heard that the rishis and munis, the sages, they have gone into the forest to do austerity, tapasya, for obtaining God. So can I also go into the forest to do tapasya?" Somehow or the other, because she was a very devout, spiritually minded lady, she says, "Okay, you go." So he went into the forest, and as he was walking, Lord Vishnu was looking from up from the Vaikuntha world, and he was smiling at his consort, Goddess Lakshmi. "Just look at this little boy. Just look at his determination. He's only 5 years old, but he's so determined to avenge this humiliation and to get a large kingdom that he's going into the forest all alone." So they sent their dear devotee Narad. We have all heard of Narad Muni's name. So Narad came down, and he came in his way. "Oh my dear young prince, you are only 5 years old. This is not the age for you to go do tapasya in the forest. You are a Rajkumar, a prince. You should go back and enjoy royal delicacies. Today there is some insult. Children don't take insult seriously. So don't worry. When you grow up, everything will become all right. And in the forest, there are many dangerous animals. What will you eat? What will you drink? It is very cold, very hot. So please go back." But Dhruva was determined. He said, "No, I will go into the forest, my dear sage. If you can give me a method to fulfill my desire, then fine. Otherwise, kindly move out of the way." So Narad Muni was also astonished. He says, "Just see, 5-year-old boy, he has such determination to do this." So he was impressed with his power of determination, even though he was going into the forest for something material, not for anything spiritual. So he said, "Okay, I will give you some mantra. You chant this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya." You go into the forest and you chant this mantra. And then you will be all right. Then eventually God will come before you and your desires will be fulfilled. So he did that. After 6 long months of performing intense austerity, Lord Vishnu appeared before him. And at that time, when little Dhruva had the experience of that vision and that love, that bhakti for the Lord awoke in the heart, then he suddenly lost all his material desire. So then Lord Vishnu asked him, "So you had so many desires in your heart, that is why you approached me. Now I am here in front of you. So what is your desire? Tell me. I will give you the benediction that you desire." So he said nothing. And he spoke a very nice shloka. "Sthana bhilashi tapasi sthitoham tvam praptavan deva munindra guhyam kacham vichinvannapi divya ratnam swamin kritarthosmi varam nayache." He said, "My dear Lord, now that I have seen you, after performing lot of tapasya, lot of austerity, I have obtained you, who are difficult to obtain even for very great sages. And now having obtained you, I feel that I have obtained a priceless diamond, and in front of which all other desires, like obtaining a big kingdom as big as the universe, or obtaining money and obtaining all of these things, are only like broken pieces of glass that are fallen on the ground. So therefore, I am completely satisfied now. I don't want anything more from you." In other words, Dhruva had now discovered something higher, which he was actually missing out on, which he did not know, and which is the story of most people in the world. So actually, we are missing out on that spiritual element in our life, that spiritual relationship that we have to God, as stated by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. That is what we are missing. Our founder Srila Prabhupada used to say that everybody is looking for God. Some know it, some don't know it. Those who know it are actively pursuing it in a serious spiritual way under proper guidance. Those who don't know it are looking for happiness, because without God you can't find happiness. So anybody who is looking for happiness in this world is actually indirectly looking for God, but is looking in the wrong place. Instead of looking at God, they're looking in matter. They're looking at material things like money and car and prestige and enjoyment to think that they will get happiness from here. But that is not the case. So the misery of this world that we all experience, that will be forced upon us, is because we are actually missing out on the real substance of life. We are missing out on the true cause of happiness, which is the path of devotion, bhakti, to God. That is what is really missing in our life. That is the one thing which, if we get, will completely make us satisfied. We will become fully happy. And then we will still perform our worldly duties, our business, our profession, our family duties. We will still do them expertly, very well, but in a detached spirit. We will still be successful, but we will know how to balance out things. We will know what kind of ambitions to have, to what degree to have, and how to utilize the fruits of our labor. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says in the 6th chapter, Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhikam tatah yasmin sthitona dukkhena gurunapi vichalyate. He says, Yam labdhva, having obtained this. Obtained what? Obtained the spiritual diamond of love for God, of bhakti. Yam labdhva cha aparam labham. At that time, any apara labha, any anya labha, any other type of gain, na adhikam tataha, we think of it as not something greater. We think it is very small. Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate na adhikam tataha. When one has obtained this priceless diamond of bhakti, then one does not consider anything of this world to be more valuable than that. One considers this diamond of bhakti to be the most valuable asset that we have in our life. Yasmin sthitona dukkhena guruna api. Even if we have the most difficult, heavy disturbance or misery in our life, guruna, guru means very heavy, dukkha means misery, even if we have na vichalyate, we will not become disturbed. We will still remain very peaceful. So this is what we are actually missing out on in our life. Srila Prabhupada used to say that our devotion to Lord Krishna, to God, is like the one. And everything of this world is like a zero. Because ultimately it will all be taken away from us. All our money. How long will this money remain with us? Sometimes it may be lost in a business transaction. Sometimes a millionaire may become a pauper overnight. Sometimes a pauper may become a millionaire overnight. These things happen. Money will come, money will go. Prestige will come, prestige will go. Comforts will come and go. Even this body will eventually go away. It will not be with us for long. So therefore, everything that we have in this world is very temporary, and it cannot give us real happiness. And because it is so temporary, it is like a zero. Zero means that ultimately it will be gone. Today we have it, tomorrow it is not there. Where is our youth? None of us in this room, I can say, are what we can call youthful. You may be youthful in spirit, but certainly you are not below 20 years of age. So when you were below 20 years of age, you were so energetic and so spirited to do so many things. But where is that youth gone now? Gone forever. It will never come back. So therefore it is called like a zero. It has only limited value. Only for the time that you have it, it can have some kind of value. Similarly, your house, your belongings, your money, everything is like a zero. So when you put one zero after the other, any number of zeros, the total sum is still zero. But if you add one before those zeros, then for every zero you add, then the value becomes tenfold. So the point that he was trying to make was that there is no harm in being successful in this world. Whatever you may be, whatever your business, your profession, your occupation, never mind, do it well. If your prarabdha is such that you will attain a lot of success, fair enough, well and good, work hard at it. But at the same time, make your life, make your profession, make your family, make your social and cultural activities truly meaningful by adding that bhakti element to it. Adding that one to your life. Then your life will become completely meaningful. Your profession, your wealth, your family, your intelligence, everything will become ultimately meaningful. So this is actually what we are missing out in life. And this one thing is that switch in your life, that once you switch it on, it will light up your life from inside, not from outside. Outside is whatever it is, according to our destiny. But what we need to do, what we are really missing out in life, is that spiritual dimension, that bhakti which we have to switch on inside our heart. That comes by satsanga, by associating with spiritually minded people and adopting spiritual practices like chanting the names of God, reading the spiritual literature, and trying to understand this philosophy. What is this Atma? What is this law of karma? What is this Sattva-guna, Rajagun, Tamaguna? What is this Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga? What is all this? What is Bhagavad Gita? What is Punarjanma or rebirth? What is the philosophy? What is the logic behind all of this? So we must begin by trying to understand these subjects very deeply and then adopting it very seriously in our life. So I would like to thank you all very much for a very patient hearing. And if time permits, I would like to leave the floor open for any questions that you may have. Thank you very much.
Now I request Past President Rotarian Sachin Bitsu to propose the vote of thanks.
Welcome. I express my heartfelt gratitude to Swamiji for giving such a enlightening lecture. And Swamiji, you had come to the same club about 12 years back, when many of us, we do remember your speech. So we are really grateful to you for coming over here and enlightening us. And I thank all the members for attending the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Sachin. Now I request Swamiji to accept our small token of love. Dear members, next week's Friday, we all will be celebrating Holi. So next week's meeting will be rescheduled. We are not cancelling the meeting because it will be a closed door meeting to decide our stand for district resolutions proposed by various clubs to be discussed in the district conference resolutions session to be held on Sunday, 10th April 2022. Day, time and venue will be informed by Monday. Now I request Secretary Lakshmikant to make the secretarial announcement.
Yeah, thank you, Milin. Well, we have 47% today. Thank you, Rotarians, for that. So next week, on 18th Friday, as President Milin said, we have Holi celebration at our past president Rotarian Sachin Biswas farm on Sangav Road. And Chairman Rotarian Alpesh and his committee are working hard on these arrangements to make an exclusive one. Details are posted on the group. I request who have not registered for the Holi celebration, please register so that we can have a good Holi celebration. So as Milind explained, that we next week we have a closed door meeting, that is on 19th March, Saturday. Okay. Fine. Thank you.
Next week's meetings, time, date, time and venue will be informed by Monday. Meeting will be adjourned after national anthem. Janagana. Meeting is adjourned.